Welcome to the Marketing AI Sparkcast, the go-to podcast where we explore the exciting intersection of artificial intelligence and marketing. Our aim is to spark your curiosity and inspire you to infuse your marketing with AI. Join Abhi Varma, a B2B marketing leader, as he navigates you through this dynamic and ever-evolving landscape where technology meets creativity.
In the world of digital experience, imagine where AI not only streamlines content creation and distribution, but also anticipates the needs of users and offers an unparalleled experience with regards to personalization and efficiency. And today we are discussing just that, the potential of AI in transforming content management systems or digital experience platforms that would really redefine digital experiences for creators, marketers, and users alike. And today I am joined by Mark Demeny and John Schneider. Mark is a senior product manager at Yext, and John is a fractional CTO at Chameleon Collective. Both have spent decades and their careers almost in this world and have worked for or worked at the major technology providers in this space. So Adobe, Sitecore, Optimizely, Contentful, and super excited to have them. Mark and John, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Abhi.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. So why don't we just start with a quick intro about your backgrounds and your current role and talk a little bit about your organization. I think it would help the listeners to get some context of the topics we are going to get into. And Mark, if you want to go first.
Sure. So I'm Mark Demeny, and I'm a senior product director at Yext. And for this audience, which is a little bit more mature, I think it's worth getting into the details. Essentially, Yext has a couple different focuses for its business. And the first is really an underlying technology platform that's pretty unopinionated. So headless CMS, technology for generating pages, managing connections and ETL, et cetera. And that's really what I focus on within the product organization. And then on top of that, there's a very opinionated product where Yext really focuses on digital presence. So, you know, managing that content specific to manage locations and push that to publishers like Google and Apple Maps and Bing, and really keeping all of that information aligned, you know, both within your own properties as well as third-party properties for organizations that really have a lot of physical presences or you know, geographic presences to maintain.
Yeah, thanks, Abhi. So I'm John Schneider. I'm a fractional CTO at the Chameleon Collective. We help companies digitally transform from the inside across five key areas: branding, marketing, customer experience, commerce, and sales. And, you know, I've been doing this really for my entire career at various leading agencies, working and pretty much focusing in content management since before content management was a thing. And by that, I mean, since like the late 90s, I started out doing, you know, content management systems for newspapers, and then spent time working with some of the leading platforms such as Interwoven, Adobe, Sitecore, Optimizely, building some of the world's largest digital experiences, you know, for Coca-Cola, NASCAR, UPS, Hilton Hotel, and others. And so my role at the Collective is to really help brands execute digital transformations. And what we're seeing right now in AI, as that applies to this space, is I'm really excited about it, because it is a very dynamic and transformational time where there's a lot of change that's upon us. And, you know, everyone's really trying to figure out, what does this mean? How does this affect me? What do I need to be thinking about? And that's where I really thrive in terms of learning things quickly, developing strategies, and helping people put them to use. And so hence, that's what I'm excited about doing here today, is to really just talk about that in this particular space where I spent my entire career.
Awesome, John. Thank you. Interwoven, that's a blast from the past. I love that. It brings back some really good memories and some not so good memories from, you know, from back in the day.
that is also where I started my CMS career as well, was Interwoven.
Nice.
Yeah, just dating all three of us.
Yeah, but it's funny. I mean, some of these trends, Mark, we've talked about this before. Some of these, you know, what's old is new, right? And I can remember doing headless things. We'll talk about headless today, I'm sure, for a little bit. But I was doing headless approaches in 2002, right? You know, and I don't think it really became this big market trend until like maybe 2015, 2016 or so.
That's a whole other podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we're going to get into some of that stuff today. And our discussion should bring to light various perspectives, right? So we're going to hear things today from the perspective of tech providers, agencies, brands, you know, developers, marketers. So lots of different points of view. But John, you were saying as part of your intro, you know, your extensive experience in this content management space. And, you know, so how are you seeing, you know, AI reshaping content strategies and delivery already? And how do you see this happening? I know it's early days, but what is your perspective of what's going on?
Yeah, so there's two key areas that I think it's affecting it, right? Or key themes, right? One is in and around content creation and the ability to drive personalization, right? Personalization has been this huge buzzword in the customer experience space for I don't know how long, right? But most people were talking about it. Very few people were actually doing it, except if you were in the area of really high-end e-commerce where the efforts related to doing the personalization could really be tightly measured and quantified. And so the brands could actually justify the investment that it took to actually create and manage all the content to drive all that personalization, right? Technology has made it possible to, you know, drive the personalization, deliver it, whatever, for years now, but the ability to actually create and manage and ideate upon all that content has been too much for many organizations, right? They it's now possible, but they would need to hire a horde of people in order to execute upon it. So they just didn't do it, right? They had other priorities. Now AI is it's not eliminating that problem, right? It's still going to be complex, but it's making it a lot easier and a lot more accessible for more brands, right? So instead of it just being in high-end B2C e-commerce, you know, customer experiences, you'll start to see it transcend down and already are further down the value chain to, you know, maybe lower volume B2C e-commerce into B2B and other areas where that the sophistication that was just too much work to do to kind of justify the ROI is now going to become a lot more accessible, right? So that's one area that I think is really going to be huge and will continue to evolve. Secondly, it's going to really reshape the way that these experiences are created, right? In terms of like how you design and build these experiences. I think we'll probably get into that a little bit deeper, but I think that, you know, the ability to use AI to automate the creation and aggregation and the design and development process is another big area that I'm seeing a lot of innovation in and around that I'm pretty excited about. Also candidly a little terrified, right? It's going to tremendously disrupt the way agencies have historically worked. You know, and that preparing for that change and embracing it, I think is going to be really key for organizations.
Yep, absolutely. And Mark, I mean, you've worked for, you know, a lot of these leading technology providers in your career in the space of product management. That's where you are today. But, you know, how has the market reacted to AI? And, you know, how are the current CMS, DXP players incorporating AI into their products, particularly for content creation and site development? What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, to extend on what John was saying, there's a lot of vendors who have gotten on that train very early on. And, you know, we sort of see the investment really in two buckets. And the one bucket is AI making current tasks that are, you know, done by a human, making that faster and better. And then the other is enabling working in new ways and doing new things. And I think right now, a lot of that investment really is still very much the former, where, you know, products have incorporated things like doing grammar checks or, you know, rewriting content, or doing things like asking AI to create a content model. And in all those cases, it'll do it. It'll get that feedback back to a human, and a human will say, yes, no, tweak. And that approach makes sense because, you know, one, nothing is perfect. And two, a lot of those tasks still require some judgment calls. So, you know, we're seeing it's kind of early days for now. There are a number of vendors who are really looking a little bit further into the future. And what they're trying to do is leverage the differentiator that they have. So, for example, Adobe has a very huge catalog of stock photography from that side of their business. And so they can, you know, lean into generative AI for images. Other vendors may have more capabilities around commerce or more capabilities around customer data. And, you know, they're looking to leverage AI around those capabilities as well. So I think, you know, currently it's a bit of a mixed bag. There has been a lot of hype, a lot of people trying things, and sort of it's a little bit of the you know, Gartner hype cycle on steroids. Right now, I think a lot of organizations are kind of in this learning mode where they said, okay, we got on board early, we tried a few things, now let's learn from it, see what makes sense and go forward from there. And, you know, even we're doing the same at Yext as well. You know, we introduced some products around generative answers, for example, and, you know, we have some really interesting learnings, you know, one of which is the smaller and more granular the piece of content, the more AI is able to do something sensible with it. It's not at the point that it can be writing complete blog posts, at least in our experience yet. And that's probably a good thing for a lot of reasons that we can describe. But yeah, there's definitely some learnings and some iteration cycles to go for sure.
Very cool. And a follow-up question to that is, I mean, this is parts of this whole AI journey over the last couple of years is almost reminiscent of what happened in the SaaS world where, you know, traditional software providers ended up sort of having a SaaS-based UI to sort of snap on to their traditional products. And as sort of time went on, we noticed that, you know, the SaaS platform started getting built from the ground up in order to support it, because you really had to think about it differently when you thought about SaaS. Do you see something similar happening in this space where existing providers are sort of baking in these AI, generative AI capabilities, but eventually there may be sort of a new generation of AI native products that may kind of come up, because you really have to think about it differently. Yes, you can bolt mm-hmm. things on, but just wanted to get your thoughts from you know, that point of view.
Yeah, Abby, I think that's definitely coming, right? I mean, I don't know, Mark, if you know, the there's a ton of new products coming out of the market. I did a kind of industry assessment last fall, and I was amazed by how many new products that kind of emerged. But I didn't really see many that were, you know, purely AI native yet, right? Mm-hmm. Most companies are looking at how do I extend and kind of bolt on AI capabilities to my existing kind of infrastructure and capabilities. But I do think it's just a matter of time until you start to see somebody come and completely rethink the way that we're doing things in a AI native way. And that becomes very, very disruptive. So I think it's only a matter of time. And I think just in general, the more that organizations, you know, both product companies and marketers start to think about how do I fully lean in and embrace the future of this, the, you know, the further along they'll be, the greater separation that they have. Like, I think this is going to, things just keep getting faster and faster. And as that trains move faster, the separation that occurs for those that get on the train and those who don't is greater and greater, right? And so I think that this is going to be another example of that. So, you know, it's something to really kind of dive into about where is this going? How do I embrace it quickly and kind of accept it versus fighting it? And I think you'll start to see that in a product perspective. And I think, you know, marketers need to really start thinking about it themselves as well.
Yeah, I think the I agree, but I also think there's a parallel that you can look at with the transition from DXP vendors that were very page based to headless vendors. You know, it was a real paradigm shift. Yet at the same time, there's a whole lot of investment in what content management looks like. And, you know, these ideas around workflow and governance and, you know, channel management and all of those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And so when headless vendors came along, there was a lot of that stuff that things just didn't have. And so mm-hmm. I imagine, you know, if AI native platforms come along, it'll be interesting, and they'll probably start with niche use cases and, you know, maybe for landing pages or things that are sort of smaller and unstructured. And then you'll have to go back and start adding those things for, you know, especially for enterprises where trust is a real part of that kind of tool chain and understanding that process. And those things will have to be built into it anyways at some point. And so I do see this point that, you know, yes, I probably see that happening and there being AI native vendors, but they're going to have to go back and retrofit a bunch of the enterprise-y governance interoperability things. And meanwhile, the other older vendors will catch up. And we see that happening in headless right now with headless vendors building things for, you know, page layout. Whereas when they first started, they were very much saying, no, don't think about pages, think about channels and think about content. And so I see a similar trend potentially happening there.
So yeah, well, the core patterns are always there, right? Like when we opened the conversation, we were talking about doing headless in 2002, because that need to separate presentation and content has been there for a while, right? It just resurfaced. And so I think that this will be a very, very similar. If you go too narrow and too far in one area, right, and forget about some of those core principles, you then end up having to reintegrate them, right?
Yep.
And it'll be that sort of, you know, the pendulum will eventually meet in the middle, but with a fundamentally different way of kind of stitching it together, right? And some baggage lost, I think, in terms of, you know, the plaque that tends to build up over time and into kind of doing things the old way.
Yep. So you both have alluded to this, you know, headless and composable, very important concepts in the area of sort of digital experience. So would love for our listeners, would love for you guys to A, define them, and B, talk about the impact of AI on both of those conceptually. And I'd like both of you to in on it. So John, if you want to take a stab at it, and then we can throw it to Mark.
Sure. First of all, I mean, just to kind of put a definition around headless and composable. So as Mark mentioned, you know, over time, the experience management world kind of shifted to these all-in platforms where you had the capability to do everything that a marketer needed in terms of managing the presentation, managing the content, workflow, all these different things. And it was great in terms of a one-stop shop. But it also potentially added some additional complexity. You ended up buying more than you needed sometimes. And it also became kind of hard to integrate with multiple different channels and other things. So a shift towards headless and composable has come around in the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, right? Where headless means you're really just managing the content absent of the presentation and making that available so that, you know, your website could pick it up, your mobile kiosk could pick it up, your mobile app could pick it up and apply their own bespoke presentation to it. And composable means, you know, interchangeable parts, right? So that I can buy, you know, a CMS product and a personalization product and a data product and a workflow product and stitch them all together because they have well-defined kind of interfaces. And so I can buy exactly what I need, make them work together easily, because they have they're open systems that are meant to be kind of plug and play with other systems, right? So it gives you a lot of kind of portability. And there's been a big trend in that of late, which has been great. It does, however, add a little bit of extra complexity in and of itself, particularly if you end up with, you know, 15 systems that you're getting content from and doing personalization and other, you know, A/B testing and other different things, right? And so AI is emerging, and I see some areas where it can help us manage all of those relationships and sort of understand and learn around them. And, you know, and furtherance of also the low code movement that's going on, right? AI is introducing a world where English is becoming the next programming language, right? So instead of learning and understanding how all of those individual systems work, you're able to you know, go ask ChatGPT, how do I integrate this to this and provide me instructions? Or ultimately probably get to a world of like, just go ahead and create this integration for me, right? And it will sort of know and understand those open systems and be able to kind of draft those integrations, right? You've even seen, there was a release, big buzz last week was the whole, you know, first AI-based programmer, what was his name, Devin or something like Devin. That?
Yeah, the AI agent, Devin.
Yeah, use English-based prompts to actually code end-to-end solutions, right? So those, I can see that's where, you know, like, one of the bigger problems with headless and composable has been the extra complexity that it adds in of like, hey, now I got to go wire back up my front end, and I've got to go, you know, figure out the orchestration of all those things, and all those things that were kind of already pre-glued together when you had these monolithic systems have now been taken apart, and that adds some extra complexity, and AI will probably be able to help manage that complexity moving forward.
Yeah. To add to what John was saying, I think one of the nice things about headless is it's implicitly working with structured data. I think that's one of the things that's often unsaid within the larger conversation. And that's a really useful concept because the act of structuring data really means that you're thinking about what its purpose is. And it's almost like wrapping it in a layer of metadata. So there's some understanding there, which is very useful for AI. I think one of the things that we're definitely starting to see is this trend towards what they call a retrieval augmented generation. So, you know, currently large language models or, you know, other learning models kind of go and grab everything and then, you know, try to make some sense of it. And this is where we get this concept of hallucinations, is that, you know, it kind of doesn't necessarily understand the context. If you're then comparing that learning set to something that's more structured and controlled, and you can put a little bit of essentially metadata saying what that purpose of that thing is, that's pretty helpful there. And so headless systems, by their nature, have that structured content underneath it. And so I think, you know, to John's point, AI will be useful in sort of taking these structured things and making and repurposing them and almost making unstructured outputs of that. But starting from a point of structure and understanding is really useful from a governance perspective, so that, you know, the AI actually is better trained and has more contextual understanding to work from.
Yep. Change is coming, and it's coming fast and furious for sure. So John, I mean, let's talk a little bit about, you know, design to development workflows. And, you know, there's all kinds of these visual copilots, or just copilots, you know, GitHub or Blur.io. Do you think that, do you see these tools change that workflow between, you know, design to development?
Dramatically, right? Like, so back in the day, quote unquote, like the process was, you know, you had your design team work on building out design comps of what, you know, wireframes of what the experience was going to look like. You would then give that to a front end developer who would cut it up into different assets and HTML, and then you would work with your CMS developer to integrate that into your CMS, into different, you know, components and page templates and all the good stuff. And then you would go and put Humpty Dumpty back together again with the CMS and actually enter the content into those templates to render your pages, right? Now, these tools, you know, particularly Builder.io's Visual Copilot is probably one of the most, you know, intriguing ones I've seen in a while. They're allowing you to go straight from the design tools of Figma, where you say you have your beautiful new landing page or website designed, right? Right click on different elements of that content, and it brings it directly into the CMS in as a manageable content element that looks not, I mean, pretty perfect. There's obviously imperfections where it doesn't always get it, you know, spot on, right? And in many cases you can use that directly, right? Or it also will help you generate, you know, the code behind the scenes that your developers then have a jump start, right? So I'm seeing, 2 to 3x in terms of productivity improvements and going from design to code on those things, right? Additionally, you know, if you look at tools like GitHub Copilot or even, you know, Vercel's launched a product called V0 where you're able to really just use English and say, hey, I need a hero slider that does X, Y, and Z, right? And it will generate for you not only the visuals, but the underlying code in whatever programming language you want for it, right? To kind of just completely jumpstart your development process. And so these new tools are really, you know, going to cut the time dramatically and also the skills that you need, right? I can really see like it going from, you know, there's been the specialization of, you know, you had, you know, I'd have a special kind of back-end site core developer and front-end developers and then designers and information architects. And the capabilities of AI is allowing kind of a lot of those specialties to, you know, if somebody's creative enough and smart enough to kind of be dangerous in some of those domains, they can now do it kind of end to end, and you don't need to have the four handoffs that increase time, communication lags, et cetera. And so I think that's going to like just dramatically change, you know, the speed in which we're developing these things and the type of skills and teams that we need to activate them.
Oh, absolutely. And Mark, what does that mean? I mean, a follow-up question to that is, what is your perspective on what that means for agencies and in-house development teams that are building out these experiences? You know, obviously, like, you know, John said, the efficiency factor, development time is sort of could really be monumental. And what is that? How does that manifest itself? You know, fewer resources? What do you think?
Again, because I've been around for a while, this kind of reminds me of the early days when CMSs were introduced and agencies and everybody freaked out because it was all of a sudden saying like, oh, you're not going to need front-end developers and the CMS will handle it for you. And in some sense, some parts of that were true. People were no longer doing HTML by hand. In another sense, you still had to think about the underlying sort of process and tool chain of how to develop, how to put all that content together, what that information looks like, or information architecture looks like, you know, what your downstream channels look like. So there's still going to be some higher level thought in order to coherently outline what the goals are and what bits you need to pull into this larger customer experience. To John's point, though, as well, some of those things with regards to how front end are created are going to change a great deal. So I think there's going to be some good and bad there as far as, you know, people are concerned within the mix. But ultimately, you know, a lot of the requirements for how an organization thinks about content management are going to stay similar and probably even become more and more important. You know, we're talking about AI in the sense of, you know, digital experience and building that digital experience. There's going to be a flip side of that on the outside world where, you know, AI is going to be changing how search engines think about content, how people find content, and that accuracy of information is going to be really important, and how that information gets to other channels is going to be really important. So I think ultimately content management will become more and more important as organizations need to really establish that trust and make sure the information is getting into the channels correctly. And because that outside world is going to become a little bit scarier. So, you know, in that sense, I think there will be more people needing to understand content management as a practice, even while AI transforms the assembly and some of the front end development process itself.
Yeah. Mark, I think you're right. Like the breadth of understanding is going to become more important, right? Like I remember if I go back to my first days, you know, back at the beginning of my career building cancer.org, we had a team of probably like 100 people working on building that site. Right. And, you know, 5 years ago, I would probably deploy a team of 10 to 15 people to build a site like that. You know, because we're not literally building every ball bearing from scratch to put the site together, right? Things of there's been this more kind of composable coarse grain bits and pieces that I can now aggregate, yeah. Right? But with AI, you're still going to have the need to do all those, you know, core principles, and you're going to be doing more, right? Because you're, it's possible to do more. But now, like, people who have the understanding of the breadth and can be a little bit more of a generalist to kind of, you still need to understand how it all fits together, have the right strategy, know what's going on,
yep.
How things are going to work, right? That's going to be really, really paramount. But you're not going to need as many specialists to do very certain specific functions because the AI is going to be able to kind of bridge those gaps. And that's where I think, you know, there's going to be just some big changes going on, which is just it's a continuation of the same theme we've been seeing for the past, you know, 25 years, right? Of stuff to technology just keeps making stuff easier to do, right? And we're able to do more with less, and that then gives you a choice of, hey, are you just going to, you know, do the same with less resources, or are you going to do more with the same resources, right?
Yeah.
And those are going to be kind of big choices that organizations need to make.
Yeah, but the overall environment is getting more complex, mm-hmm. right? You're having to make sure your information is findable. You're competing against a whole bunch of other organizations mm-hmm. that can buy a lot of the same AI technology and expertise and buy AdWords. And, you know, in that sense, there's more competition in the outside world. The environment is more complex. There's more channels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it all balances out in the end.
Yeah. And John, something you said earlier was sort of got me thinking. So you're saying there's a future where designers and developers may get along, where you suddenly have a situation where, you know, things look amazing in a PDF or a Figma or a XD or something like that. And when it, you know, becomes like a working prototype, not so much because there's compromises made. But I have a two-part question. So firstly, do you obviously the level of collaboration between, you know, creatives and developers, I mean, that is going to change that, you know, paradigm. So that's one. And the follow-up to that is that what does that mean? I mean, you've led the agency life quite a bit. And what does that mean from an agency standpoint in terms of what they would need to do to provide that distinctive, you know, value that they're bringing to the table and stay competitive?
Yeah, well, I mean, it comes down to like the greater importance on the creativity and the ability to, how do I drive this at scale and not just let the system do something for me, right? Because that's not, you're not adding value. I mean, that's always been the case with, you know, with agency work, is you're bringing experts that have a lot of creative and expertise, and enabling you to do something that you couldn't otherwise do for yourself, right? But I think it's going to become more acute for agencies to put a premium on that talent, to people who aren't just coming in to do what they're told, right? But are coming in to really be a plus one to a process and make it better, right? So I do wonder, like, how is that going to affect, you know, larger agency teams, maybe organizations that, you know, heavily leverage offshore development. I mean, the world has gotten virtual and people are, you know, assembling teams from all over the place, right? But those, you know, bigger, more heavy kind of waterfall style processes, even though everybody says they're agile, there's still a lot of that going on, where you end up with, you know, teams of developers offshore producing something to spec. That's going to become, you know, a little bit more, less competitive, I think, right? And the opportunity to bring the developers and designers together, or even make people more, what do I want to call it, just fungible in terms of the roles that they can play.
Yeah.
You know, I think those agencies and, you know, groups will, you know, be able to kind of stand out and be a little bit more nimble in it, right? Versus, you know, larger sort of more, I don't know, clumsy is probably the wrong word, but just not as nimble organizations is probably the.
I mean, the way I think about it is almost like, in my head, if there was a Venn diagram of designers and developers, I feel that the overlap post AI world is just going to become bigger, right? But between those two, where, you know, you can have designers sort of, they may not know code, but they can leverage AI to sort of generate some of that. And developers, I mean, they have a whole new appreciation and capability from a, from a design either the experience standpoint. So that sort of Venn diagram overlaps significantly.
Yeah, and, well, and it should also like eliminate like the need to, or for people not to be self-sufficient, right? Oftentimes it'd be cases where, hey, a designer has updated something and they want to change something pretty, I mean, it's pretty aesthetic, right? And they need to go flip it over to a developer to make that change for them, right?
Yeah.
And CMSs and other tools have kind of over time eliminated that barrier, made it less and less. And now AI is, that's going to become, that's just going to accelerate, right? So that developers, you know, will be able to focus on things that they actually enjoy more. Candidly, most developers don't enjoy getting those types of tickets to work on, to change something that they, you know, it's an emotional change. It doesn't seem to make, logically make sense why they're doing it. And they're just, you know, frustrated of why somebody, you know, asked me to change this color five times. Right.
Yeah.
So being able to kind of eliminate that and make people more self-sufficient to just make the changes themselves that they need will be, will definitely get bigger and bigger. And then, you know, folks will end up spending time in their specialties at deeper, more complex tasks, you know, when they are doing them.
Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of that back and forth we were talking about where, you know, initially programming was very sort of artisanal and you had to have a wide sort of system understanding and a lot of your tasks were interesting. And then it sort of shifted to, okay, separation of roles and more of a factory model and a little bit more, you know, waterfall, and those things could be packaged up and, you know, done by individual teams. And then agile was a little bit of a shift back, but I think, you know, it will get back to what John is saying, like that the real value of that task is understanding the breadth of it. And so, you know, hopefully that becomes more interesting, fulfilling work for those people doing that.
So, Mark, a very specific question to you with regards to, you know, your product manager persona, if you will, product management persona, is there is so much noise on AI, and you know, it's almost like, you know, if you don't have AI your product messaging or some sort of AI product capability, there's sort of an element of FOMO for product management professionals. And I'm also hearing from a lot of product management professionals that they're under tremendous pressure to incorporate some of that AI into their products, and some of it is good, it's making people think about it differently, but then there's a lot of this sort of quote unquote AI washing that is happening. So being a product management professional, what are you seeing? What are you feeling, you know, from your peers generally in the industry?
Yeah, I mean, there's generally, there's a few trends and some of which are really sort of painful and, you know, some of which are sort of, you know, approaching fraudulent. The painful stuff that I'm alluding to is, you know, as a product manager, normally you have a pretty linear process to building something, right? You're doing that upfront validation, you know, you build a proof of concept, you learn, you iterate, and, you know, as long as you follow that process and, you know, work in nice agile chunks, you pretty much, you know what that outcome is going to look like. In AI, a lot of that thinking gets thrown out the window. You know, you start with a hypothesis, you throw a whole bunch of data at it, and the output of that might be, hey, we're not seeing any uplift, you know, whatsoever. We're not seeing any correlation whatsoever. And so, you know, AI, and that's a little frustrating for product managers who are used to that sort of, you know, fairly linear and not quite guaranteed, but, you know, pretty known process versus, hey, we're going to try to do these things and learn from them, and some will work and be wildly successful and others will be completely unsuccessful. And so, you know, from a morale perspective and organizational perspective, you have to accept that failure and that experimentation mindset a heck of a lot more. So that's definitely interesting. You know, yeah, we are obviously all getting pressure to incorporate AI into the products. You know, ultimately, those things bear themselves out very quickly. You know, I think there is a little bit of AI washing going on, but if you put it in and people aren't getting value from it, it's obvious to them very, very quickly. So I think in the past, you could, you know, claim a lot of things, and it might take you a long time to get caught out on that because implementation cycles were really long. nowadays, because of headless and composable and these things, it's much easier to build software and try these things and incorporate them into your stack and find out that they don't work. So, you know, you can't get away with AI washing in the same sense. In some sense, you know, some vendors are just simply licensing from, you know, underlying vendors, and we do that as well. That makes sense in some cases. We're also starting to you know, build out our own LLMs and learn from that as well. So I think the biggest AI washing examples that I've seen are just using AI where it's, you know, it's linear regression, or it's just, you know, applying a simple algorithm to things. And so you do see that in marketing all the time. But I think within our industry of marketing technology and DXP, the buyers are getting much more educated to understand, you know, some of the terms and underlying technologies and benefits. And I think it's been harder to get away from. You know, if I am seeing AI washing, it's really not in our industry. It's in other industries where it's like, oh, it's AI powered headphones. Like, well,
right.
What the hell does that even mean, right?
Right.
So, you know, that's where you still see that a little bit.
I wanna ask you both. Obviously, we've spoken about technology and workflows and experiences and digital transformation. But my last question to the both of you was really, how do you envision AI furthering collaboration? You know, there's content creators, there's marketers, there's the technical folks. What is your sense of what does this mean for collaboration? And John, if you want to kick that off.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's going to be interesting, right? I do think that the AI becoming this sort of like leveling the playing field and enabling people, provided they get, you know, to a basic understanding of how AI in and of itself works, right, will allow folks to kind of iterate and work together in a way, in a faster way, in a more, you know, more collaborative way than maybe they've been able to do in the past, because things are able to kind of turn around really, really quickly. So I think that's probably the biggest area that just jumps out, is if we can get to that common level of literacy and where it's embedded in processes, where you can do things rapidly and you can get people from those different perspectives kind of collaborating and almost pair programming in real time using English as the language and AI as the, you know, the guy typing the keyboard to actually get the code. I think that could unlock some really interesting possibilities for increased collaboration.
Definitely agree. You know, to John's point around that collaboration that was already starting to happen with that shift to things like Figma and, you know, automatically generating code off that. And I think, you know, this is really why Adobe saw Figma as such an interesting acquisition target, even at whatever it was, 50x revenue, because that is the model of the future that will start to be, you know, one of those glue technologies for those collaborations and handoffs that John is talking about.
Awesome. This has been, you know, super fascinating. And I know the three of us could geek out about this stuff for, you know, the next couple of hours, but our time has come to an end. Thank you both very much. This was really a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, thanks, Abby. It was a lot of fun. Really glad to be here.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Oh, thank you both. And to our listeners, we really hope that today's discussion has highlighted the role of AI in shaping the future of content management and digital experiences. Both Mark and John are seasoned professionals in this space, and you've heard from them the integration of AI offers really unparalleled opportunities for innovation and efficiency, personalization, and marketing strategies. And this is a space that we're all going to be watching pretty closely. We invite you to share your experiences, questions, and insights on how AI is transforming your approach in this area. Hit up Mark, John, or me on LinkedIn. And then, thank you for tuning in. And until next time, keep innovating.